Welcome to Live Daf, your online Daf Yomi Shir.
Shalom Aleichem. Welcome back to today's Daf Hayomi Maseches Nida Daf Nun Ches. We begin on Nun Ches Amud Aleph, around 9 lines from the top at the 2 dots. Ala Keva, Valorish Goydlot Mei Vachu. So the Isha discovers a stain somewhere on her skin, which is lined up with the source of the nida blood. For example, ala keva, on the back of her heel, or reish goydlo, on the top of the thumb toe, so the front of the toe, which is aligned with the source of dan nida, tmeya. She's tummy. Now, although, as we learned yesterday, minha toira, an issue is only tummy if she has a sensation, hargosha, as the dam is flowing out. However, midrabanan, we don't differentiate. Even merely discovering a stain renders her tummy, provided that stain can be attributed to the source of her dam nida. So one example is, if it's located in an area which is aligned with the source of her dam, ala keva, valorish goyla, tmei v'chul. Now, why are these locations considered aligned? Bishleima akeva, I understand the back of her heel. Ovid denogavai semokim. When in a sitting position, it could fold back in close proximity to that area, and therefore, it's attributed to dam nida. Eloresh goydla, my time. What about the toe? Chitema, perhaps. Zimnin denogavai akeva. Maybe it could happen that the toe, although it did not receive the dam directly as a drip from the makor of dam, but perhaps the dam dripped down to the akev, to the sole, which touched the other toe, which touched the toe on the other foot. So perhaps there was a transfer from one place to the other, in which case it's still dam nida. Vichitema perhaps will suggest, Zimnen, it could have happened, Denogaba Keva, this toe touched the other soul. Umimach Sakinan Tuma Makim Makim? Since one do speculate that Tuma would travel from one location to the other. But Tanya, we have a Bryce which indicates otherwise. Hoysala Makabitzavara, the woman knows she had some sort of scratch on her neck. Shatucha litlis, which can provide a taliyah, as we discussed yesterday. Taliyah means an excuse, a cover story for this dam. If you can attribute it to some kosher dam, some dam tohar, then you don't have to consider her anita. That was a special leniency, a kula applied to ksamim, which to begin with only the rabbanim. In which case, if there's any alibi to excuse to explain where the dam came from other than dam nida, she's tohar. For instance, a maka b'tzavar, which gives her that shatucha litlis, gives her that tliya, toila, fine, she can attribute the drip, the stain, back on the, coming from the wound on her neck. But al ksefa, now there's a girsa, the bach says makam shatucha litlis, which is really the point of our discussion. Location is what determines. So if it's in a place where the dam could have, was likely to have dripped from the tzavar over to that spot on the guf, okay, then it's a fair attribution. But let's say she discovers a drop of dam on her shoulder, where it's highly unlikely that it skipped over from the neck to the shoulder. It's not like a direct drip down, it's sort of to the side. Al-Kseva she'enu chayalutlis, where you can't really attribute it to the neck. Eina toila, she can't blame it on the wound. Vein aymrim, now we don't say, maybe it was transported. Shema b'yada natlasu, perhaps she's received some dam on her hand as she was touching her neck, and then that dam went from the hand to the shoulder. Shema b'yada natlasu, perhaps she received a dam in her hand, v'yasa l'shem, and transported it over to the shoulder. We don't say that. So if you can attribute it directly, fine, but indirectly, not. So likewise, regarding Tuma, I understand there could be a direct drip down to the Akev, but not to the Goydel. That only would work through a stopover. So as the Gemara, yeah, actually, Elo Shani Resh Goydel. Resh Kavod is different, meaning it's possible that the dam dripped directly onto that, even though it's not really technically aligned with the source of dam. But as she's walking, there's movement back and forth, and it could have chanced upon the toe as it was passing beneath the source of dam. As she's walking, it could happen to Misrami that it should get aligned for the moment opposite the area and receive its dam. Okay, so the question was, a spot on the Akev could be attributed, it could be aligned with the Makam Nida, but the Goydel? It would seem that there's no direct flight from the Makar Nida to the Roish Goydel. The answer is that could have happened as she was walking. But in general, we do not attribute Tumah from one place to the other, which means to say, we assume what you see is what you get. You found it here. It was here to begin with. It didn't come from a second location, etc. Asks the Gemara, "V'lemach sakinu tumah makom u'makom." We do not attribute tumah from one place to the other. About Tanya, listen to this brisa again regarding dam nida. Nimtzes al roi kishrei es brisa. She discovers a stain on the kishrei of the joints. So it's the top, so the back of her hand, where it's unlikely that the dam would have somehow arrived directly on that spot, because even if she was inspecting herself, it would have been found on the bottom surface of her fingers, not on the top, on the joint area. How did it get there? Nim says, "I'll kishrei tzvayseh." Still, temeya. Why? Explains the brayso, because hands have their own way of moving around. Nishiyadai maskoni, and hands are always mobile and active. But still, how did it get to the top of her hand? My time, why? Lav mishum damrina batka b'chad yada. The only way is to assume there was a stopover, was transported from elsewhere. For instance, she did a bedikah with her right hand, right finger, and then, unbeknownst to her, the dam got transferred by touch to the other side, to the other hand. So you could have gone to the back of her hand by way of the right hand over to the left hand. She did a bedikah with the right hand, and that got transported to the back of the second hand. So you see that we do attribute indirectness and stopovers to dam. Right? So earlier we said that we do not do that. And here we say, well, maybe one hand did the bedikah, and not the other. Lo, he said to the Gemara, no. It's not because we assumed there was a two-step trip. Shani yada de kula vidat naga. Hand is very different than any other limb, because a hand is moving, it's touching, and it's possible that she was handling the source of the nida area with her left hand, and somehow the back of the hand brushed against the area and got stained. Al shoyga val parsi semi bifnim. What about on her leg area? She finds it on the shoyk. The thigh, the leg area of upper sisseh, or the bottom of her foot, the foot area on the bottom, mibifnim, so it depends. Again, if it can be attributed to the source of dam, fine. So mibifnim means, so suppose it's the right hand, we have the thigh, we have the leg, we have the foot. So if it's on the interior facing surface, facing, the left side, so it's the right side, but it's the inside of the right side facing the left side, that's called mibifnim on the inside, then it's likely that it dripped down from the source and she's tummy. Now, when we say mibifnim, so it's the inner surface, the left facing surface. So basically, you can have four surfaces. You have the inside, you have the outside, you have the tzadim, what the Mishnah calls tzadim, the front and the back. Now, when we say inside, until what point? How far around is considered inside? They explain that Mokum Chavak until the place of Chavak, which explains that the sinews, the collection of sinews and tendons that connect the knee to the thigh. So once you get to that point, that's already out of the Lifnim zone. Iboilu, now the question is, what about the actual place of sinews? Are they like the inside or the outside? Iboilu, Mokum Chavak, Lifnim, or is it Kalachot Toshma, Tanya Fatina, Ad Mokum Chavak? So Lifnim stretches until the place of Chavak. Chavak is like hug, right? So the sinews that hug, that connect, the chavak atzmai, the actual chavak area, kilofnim, is considered like the inside, and there is tumah there. Rav Chiya, brother of Avi, maskal behedya, he had a straightforward quotation. Amrit Rab Yanai, Admon Chavak, Chavakat Miklufnim. Okay, so it's pretty clear. Now comes an interesting shaila. Boy, Rabbi Yirmiyahu. What if the Isha discovers an odd looking stain? Kesher Mao, it's round like a bracelet. Keshura Mao, the droplets are lined up like a straight line. Ketipen Tipen Mao, what if there are a bunch of randomly organized droplets? These aren't your typical stains. Leroy Chavi Reicha Mao, what if it's alongside the width? So it's a horizontal stain instead of a vertical stain, which is typical. Mao. Toshma comes at right from the price that we discussed yesterday. Toshma al-Basara, she finds a stain on her skin, and the price elaborates with extra words, which seem to cover all types of designs. It says, Safik Tame, Safik Tar, she's Tame. So when it says al-Basara, we assume it covers everything. My love, Kai Gavna, covers all types of configurations. Lo, no, maybe it's referring to a standard, typical. Dilma David Kiritsua, the classic Ritsua. Like a strap, meaning a downward, shaped a drip. But otherwise, maybe we have to attribute it to elsewhere. There was a story about Ahiyata, said this woman, she discovers her stain, not on herself or on her beged, rather on the chassis threads, the horizontal threads that she was setting up in the loom. What happens now? Is it from her or from elsewhere? Asoi Kamei de Rabbiani, she approached Rabbiani with this question. Amalei, she says, go back and duplicate the motion and see if the threads at some point in your motion are aligned beneath the makar of Damnida. Amal Tazel, Batezi. She should go and come, meaning redo a duplicate of Atani Asta Gemara. We don't have duplicate as a fair test. Atani in Shoyle Mitaharis. Rashi brings this Gemara back enough. Hey, there was some Tuma sitting nearby, and he took his talus and gave a sweep. Right, so this sweeping motion. Efshar, it's very, very likely, almost impossible. I wouldn't have brushed by the Tuma. And he's not sure what happened. So there was a notion to go back and redo it, try to duplicate and see if it brushes the actual Tuma. And the Gemara says, no, you can't. Atani in Shoyle Mitaharis, we don't redo things in order to prove matters of Taharis. So why are we sending her back to duplicate? Answers the Gemara, Ki Amrinan in Shoyle Lekula. We don't do that to be lenient. So if it seems like you touched, it's over. You can't go back and, because who's to say the next time will be an exact duplication of the previous time? But in our case, we're to begin with. There really is no established reason to make her tummy. Look, it wasn't on her skin, it wasn't on her garment. So here, actually, avalo chumra shayin, here it's going to be a chumra. If she discovers that the chassis is aligned with the area, when she duplicates it, so we're going to be machmer on her, which is sort of above and beyond the basic, you know, notion of halacha. So it's a chumra, and that, you know, that works. So he says to her, look, if you go back and you duplicate it, and you see that it's lined up with the area of your tumah, so we are machmer, and she becomes tam. Hoysapeshtas v'chulu. So Mishnah spoke about a stain on a garment. Locations, what determines? In the below waist area, you attribute it to the makor tum. Above, you're safe and sound. But if it's something which she was using as a blanket, which could move around, so a stain discovered anywhere on that blanket could have been attributed to the makor of tum. She's tameh. Tanya. This new halacha. Hayresi, I myself ruled on this matter, Be'ir Roimi, in the city of Rome, Le'isr, that in fact we suspect that it's Tamid and she's Tamid. Kshabasi Eitzel. So this was my own idea, but then when I came to my colleagues, they confirmed it. Kshabasi Eitzel Chacham Shabbatar, and I came to the Chacham in the south, and it's Yisrael. They told me, well said, Yafai Reisa. That's a valid rule. Tan Rabban. Suppose two women have used the same rope, after which you find a stain. Who do you attribute it to? Tan Rabban. So we have a tall woman, short woman, aruka, shalof shechaluk shel tzara. Tall one, who wore the garment of a short woman. Or the other way around, Uktsara, a short one, Shalafsha, who wore Chalukha Shalaruka, the long one's garment. And you find a stain. Who do you attribute it to? Depends on the location. Im, Magia, Keneget, Beis HaTorba Shalaruka. If the location corresponds with the source of Nita of the tall one, which certainly corresponds and is even below the area of the short one, Shteim Tmei, so they're both Tamei, because the culprit can be either one. Vimla, but otherwise, suppose it only reaches an area which is aligned with the shorter one and not the longer one, then the longer one is off the hook. Aruka is Tahir, Uktsara, she is the one that's Tmei. Tani, we have another Braisa, Batka Chavluka. Rachel examined her garment before she passed it on to Leah to use. Vishalatul Chaberta, and she loaned it to Leah. After which she finds a stain. Who do you blame it on? He, Tahira. Rachel is safe and sound because, look, she says, I checked it. There's nothing there when I gave it to you. Vichaberta Tehluba, but Leah can blame it on Rachel. What does that mean? Omar of Sheish is in Dinat Tanan. Not regarding her tummy status. Only regarding matters of din. What does that mean? Who has to send it to the cleaners? So Rachel says, look, it was clean when I gave it to you. Leah says, I don't trust you. You said you checked it properly, so I don't have to wash it for you. But regarding matters of Yeridea, regarding matters of Tumah, Lin and Tumah, the Leah can't blame it on Rachel, unless she can prove that Rachel is the culprit. He, Tahira. So Rachel is safe and sound. She says, look, I checked it. I know it was clean when I gave it to you. But Chaverta Tmei, but Leah is stuck with the Tum. Ask the Gemara. Turn to the base. Maishna Mada Sanyu. So here we're saying that Rachel is safe and Leah is Tum. Even though, really, it could have come from either one. We attribute it to Leah. Why is it different than the Braisa? Two women were handling a bird, and there was a shechita, there was dam there. We know there's a certain amount of dam there, a sela, a size. It could have, you know, created a sela-sized stain, let's say an inch square, of dam. V'nimtza kesela alzu, kesela alzu, and lo and behold, Rachel and Leah, each one found a stain on themselves, the size of a sela. So one cell can be blamed on the bird. The second one is Damnida. Which one's which? Shteim Tmeis, in this case. You can't give either one the Tliya. They both have to presume that they're Tamei. So the question is, here too, true, Rachel checked and she knew, but the fact is, we found a stain after both have used it, so we have to attribute it to both. We don't know which one, so they're both Tamei. Now, Taisa asks Akasha, how could you compare the two stories? Here, you have no right to prefer one over the other. They were both involved in a tzipur. And both discovered a stain. There's an extra stain here, since you can't identify what's what, so they're both Tamei. But here, in the case of the robe, Rachel says, I checked it before I gave it to you. Why am I to blame? So, Ben Tamei is an interesting pshat in the Gemara. He says that in the case of the brisa by the bird, Rachel handled the bird, and then Leah handled the bird as well. So, if Rachel would have been just on her own, handled the bird that produces dam, she discovers it, casts him on herself, she's tar. The reason why she's thrown off track is because Leah is part of the equation. So the adding of Leah into the equation disrupts her tliya, because now we have too many stains to blame on the bird. And therefore they're both Tamei. Likewise, in the case of the robe, Rachel, independent of Leah, will be safe and sound. Look, she had a robe that she wore. She inspected it after wearing. It was clean. She's good. So what's the issue? Well, now you have Leah. Who wants to blame the stain on Rachel? At least regarding din, regarding the obligation of cleaning it. So it turns out that to a certain extent we are attributing it to Rachel, at least to absolve Leah of the cleaning bill. So perhaps in this case as well, we should apply the same rule as the bird with double stain. So adding Leah into the equation eliminates Rachel's excuse, or eliminates Rachel's tliya. Since regarding Leah, to a certain extent, we attribute the dam to Rachel, so Rachel's got to live with it. She's considered tamei. That's Gemara's kash. But the Gemara does answer. There's a huge difference between the two cases. You can't compare. Shani Hassan, the case of the bird, is very different than our case. Dikasel Yisera, there you have a double stain. A cell is, the size of the stain. You have a double stain. Rachel has a stain. Leah, you only have one cell of dam tahar, the bird. So since you have two stains with one tilia, which cannot be applied to both women, so they're both stuck with it, and they're both tummy. As opposed to the case of the robe, why should I blame it on Rachel if she says I checked it? So she's off the hook. And Leah is stuck with the ikasa. Tan Rabbah. Lav shel shloisha chalukos. Or chalukin. So Nisha wore a triple layer. One robe on top of the other, on top of the other. Habdukun lo. Which had been inspected, pre-inspected by her. So she knew they were clean. Dukun lo means they were checked as far as you're concerned, and then she discovers some sort of stain. If there is an alibi, there's some excuse out there, some other source of dam to her, toila, she can blame the stain on that. Even if it's on the lowest level, lowest layer. Because perhaps the upper one, peeled away, and the dam came flying in from outside and landed on that lower layer. But any chaylutlois, let's say there is no alternate source of dam which she can attribute the stain to. In this case, ain't a toilet, she can't blame it on anything. I feel belly, even if it's on the upper layer, where it is likely that it came from the outside, but she has no story for that. She has to take the blame. Keitzah, for example. Over b'shuk shel tabachim, she passed through a butcher market where there's an abundance of dam which could have splattered on her. Toilah, she can blame it on that. Even if it's on the lowest garment. She did not pass through such a blood-laden area. So then we blame it on herself. Even if it's on the upper layer, she can't blame it on anything. Rather, she has to take the credit. Okay, let's do a quick chazorah of the Gemara until this point. Okay, some on the guf, if it's aligned with the makam of Darnida, she's Tamei, for example, a keva, which could have folded up into that area. We have Resh Goydla, which could have, as she was walking, could have lined up beneath the makar of Darnida. But in general, we do not attribute Tumi makam lo makam. We don't say Tuma travels. So why then by the hand, the back of the hand, do we say it came from the makar of Darnida? The answer is because the Yadayim Askanias, they move around, and it's possible that it would have brushed that area. What about the shoika, the foot, the leg? So if it's on the inside, facing surface, then she's tame, and we define exactly what that surface is. We had a question regarding peculiar shaped kesem. What status that has? We thought we had a raya, which didn't really pan out. We had a story about the Isha discovered the stain on the chassis, on the loom, who was instructed to go and duplicate and see what happens. We learned about something that you wear at night, you cover at night. A stain anywhere on that item is presumed to be tamei. We discovered the tall and the short women, and we discussed the borrowed chaluk. We compared it, and then we differentiated between that and the story of the one sepur and the double stain, and we had the triple layer, where if there's an excuse that covers even the bottom layer, otherwise even the top layer, it's presumed to be tummy. Speaking about tliyos, says the Mishnah, we allow her to blame anything that she can find to blame it on. For instance, shachta behema b'chayva if. She was involved in shachting an animal or bird, which produces dam. So then she can attribute the stain to those sources. She was involved with stains, or she yashva, she sat near those involved in such. Or her gemachelis, Oh, the famous Machilis, which is the topic of the next sugya. Machilis is a louse, which when squished produces dam. And she knows she killed one. Ha'arezu toila ba, she can blame it on that. At kama toila. How big of a stain can she blame on the louse? How much blood does it produce at a maximum? Rabbi Chanina, and Tignosay Matki Gris, she'll pull a certain kind of bean. So gris is a half, a split pull, which is an area on the body which can grow 36 hair. So it's about the size of a penny, more or less. Ve'avapi sheloi harga. Chanina Tignos adds, even though she knows she didn't, she wasn't involved in lice today, but the Chachamim established the gris size stain as a minimum threshold for tumas kesem, since lice are common, and we want to keep things consistent and clear. Since it's possible that it came from there, we absolve any stain smaller than that. What other alibis can we have? Let's say the husband, the son sitting nearby has some sort of wound, a scrape. She can blame it on that as well. Perhaps it was through touching that she got stained. Let's say she herself has a known wound, a scratch or a scrape. Even if it's partially healed and scabbed, if it could reopen and produce another batch of dam, that's good enough for us. In fact, it was a story. This woman, Shabbos, she approached Rabbi Akiva with a stain. Amrili, he says, let's explore. Let's try to, you know, find perhaps some sort of alibi. Perhaps, can I suggest that you had some sort of wound on your skin? She says, yeah, but I'll be honest with you, it's already healed. He said, oh, not so quick. Maybe it's not fully healed. Is that possible? Can it be reopened, you know, by, you know, getting scratched and opened up again and produce new dam? She says, yeah, actually, hey, it's possible. Petiyah Rav Akiva. Yotari, says to her. So now he notices his students nearby looking at each other strangely. Why is our Rebbe being so lenient? She says, why is it so difficult in your eyes? Because the truth is that the whole concept of Tumas Kesem is only the Rabbanon. And it was limited to certain parameters. Chacham only presented the halacha of Kesem in a way of leniency. Because min ha-Torah shenemar, v'isha kesiya zova, dam yeh, zovi b'vsarim. We learn dam, actual blood sightings, makes her tummy blood cast, not a stain that she discovers on her. And since it's the Rabbanon established clear-cut parameters that it has to be something which cannot be blamed on Tahara, and likewise it has to conform to a certain minimum size, as we saw. Now let's say you discover a stain on an aid, cloth used to wipe yourself. She doesn't have a car, sitting under the pillow. So next morning she sees this, and it's all of dam. She finds a stain. Ogle tor, mashal tami. Depends on its shape. If it's round, unlikely it came from her, because a wipe would be long. So it must have been from a different, come from a louse or something. Mashuch, if it's elongated, then it's tami. Divrei Blezer Tzadik. Okay, so the Mishnah presented this concept called tliyos. Phoenicia has any source of dam other than her own, she can blame it on that. If it's likely that it came from there, if there's some sort of connection and reasonable, you know, cover story. Tanina. So in fact, our Mishnah fully supports this very same concept discussed in the Braisa, that we sort of excuse and blame her stain on another source of dam to make her tar. Tanina latan rabbanu mas. There was a story. Vatala Reb Meir bekilar. Reb Meir allowed an isha with a stain to blame it on kilar, some sort of reddish material that she was handling. The Rebbe as well. Tala b'sraf shikma. He blamed it on the sap of a shikma tree. Oishi yashva. Mishnah speaks about her sitting near others involved in handling dam. That's enough of a cover story for her as well, because it could have splattered. It could have. Yashva, and only if she actually sat with them. Lo yashva, but otherwise, you can't just, you know, speculate. Perhaps unbeknownst to me, I passed by a person. No, that's a bit too far. So our Mishnah supports the Braisa, which presents the same idea. You have to have a substantiated alibi. She passed through the market where it is known that there is dam. It's just a question of whether it landed on her or not. But there is a bona fide established alternate source of dam, which is a precondition for its liya. True, Safek Nita's allowed. We're not sure whether it landed on her. Or maybe not. Safek Lay Nita's allowed. Toilo, she can blame it on that. However, Safek Avra. Safek Lay Avra. She's not even sure she passed through that alleyway. In this case, she can't use it as a Tliya Tzmiyah. Harga Machailas. Okay, now over to the Machailas Suki. Mishnah speaks about an Isha who certainly touched a Machailas and killed it. Blame your stain on that. Harga, and if she killed it, yeah. Loi harga loi, but otherwise, you can't just speculate, maybe there was a louse, and maybe it came from there. Mas Nisan Mani, who's speaking in our Mishnah? Because we're going to have three Shitas on this. It is Rabban Shimon Gamlieli, the son, he holds. Harga toila, loy harga ina toila. Divrei hushita, Rabban Shimon Gamliel. He says the machilas excuse is only if she can confirm that she was handling the machilas. V'chacham aimrim, they go the other way to the other extreme. No way, bankach toila. Whether or not she was involved in the machilas, you can just attribute it to it. They're so common that you can attribute it to, you know, today. Say the bed bugs are making a comeback, so it's very common to have these things. Amar Shimon Liel, you know, I'm gonna just try to frame our discussion. We're both sort of presenting extreme positions. I can see Ladvarai and Kates, Uldibri Chaverai and Saif. My position is just limitless, and likewise, my opponent's position is endless. What does that mean? I'm being very machmer. Unless she can vouch for having handling a machoilus, she's tummy, even on a small stain, which makes it very difficult to handle. Very machmer. But conversely, my colleagues are very lenient. They're blaming anything and everything on an unknown source of dam. Well, the Varian Kates, according to me, I'm being very, very machmashainlacha isha shter labaila. You'll hardly find a woman who's tired for her husband, because as soon as she sees any sort of droplet, she's done. Shainlacha komita mita, find me a bed. Shainbat kamiti dam without some droplets of dam. The bed bugs, right? Dam achilus of a creature. And I'm saying, unless she can confirm that she handled the creature, she can't blame it on it, which puts her at a strong disadvantage. But on the other hand, according to my chaver and my chachamim, there's no end to the leniencies, because on their end of things, they're saying any stain can be blamed on any creature. You won't find the one who's not to her. Everything can be blamed and excused. Because you won't find sheets without droplets of dam neither, and they're excusing it. So even though she has no confirmed alibi, you're just going to excuse it. So let's take a middle route. Let's take a compromise route. Aval nirin divrei. Let's go with the words of Chanina and Tiknis. His position seems to be more plausible than mine and your position. So actual honesty. Because he would take the following approach. He would say, look, even without actually killing a machilis, since there are comments, that's a minimum threshold, but up to a certain size. See, that's a middle compromise. She doesn't have the killing machilis aspect, but it's also with a limit. He would say, Ad kama yitoylat kegrushal po. I'm going to take his approach. I'm going to agree to his approach, which is she can be toila, a stain, and kegrishal po, until the size of a gris. And even Rashi says, afilu harga. Even if she did not actually kill the machavis. Well, the Rabbanan Amri toila ad kama. Now, let's just further explore the Rabbanan Shita. which was presented as being on the other side of the spectrum. You can blame anything. So, until how big? I mean, Rashi says, "Chiefshalutlas kesem gadol machayles." So you have this huge stain, you're going to blame it on a tiny louse? Unlikely. There's a bit of a larger creature called a pishpish. If the stain is up until the size of a turmus, a bigger bean, you can blame it on the pishpish. So they're going a bit more. Not limitless, not endless, but a bit more than the gris slash machilus allowance. So bottom line, we have three opinions regarding attributing a stain to a creature. We have on the one side Rabban Shimon ben Gamliel, who says, yeah, blame it on the machilus, provided you were involved in a machilus. We have the Chachamim, who say, even without involvement, you can blame even a larger stain on the machilus, on the unknown machilus, or the unknown pishbeish, whereas according to Rabbi Chanina Tignois, that's a middle route, which says, look, up until a gris, you're safe and sound, even if you can't confirm the presence of a machilus. It's just been established as a minimum size, as a shear for a kesem due to the prevalence of lice, but even though you can't necessarily independently confirm your association with the louse, you're below that threshold, you're tar. Tanur Rabbanan, speaking about this pishpish creature, pishpish is a erk kerachbe, it has a very unique shape. Its length is like its width, meaning it's a perfect square. But time kerecha, it tastes like it smells. Bris krusaloi, there's a guarantee, shekala moilo meriachbe, if you squish it, if you squish it with your fingers, you'll smell it. Now, what's the point of discussing this? Arka kerachbe, the niksam, the point of discussing its configuration is regarding the halacha of stains. Rashi explains that all would agree, if you find this square-looking stain, you can blame it on the pishpish. Pretty evident that that's where it came from. Pretty unique, uniquely shaped stain, it came from the pishpish. What about the point of the smell and the taste? What does that pertain to? Tamik Yerechai, Linin Trum, regarding Trum and the Snam. A Kohen is mill of having a Truma meal, and he tastes a buck. A Shatom Tam Pishpish, he tastes his pishpish in his mouth. What should he do? He doesn't want to swallow the bug, but spitting out the Truma is going to invalidate it. It's going to ruin the food. How is it? He should spit it out. It's more important. Menoyada, now, how does he even realize that it's a pishpish? Presumably he doesn't eat pishpish in for lunch. So how does he know what a pishpish tastes like? The answer is he smelled it. And it smells like it tastes, so he knows that it's a pishpish. But how would he know what it smelled like? For that we have the answer. We have a guarantee. But if you squish it, you smell it. So he once squished it, so he's familiar with the smell, and now he can identify the taste. Amar Ravashi. Speaking about the Talia opportunity, Irish Yesh Bechazirim, Ein Chosh Nuksam, a city roaming with swine, which Rashi says, waddle in the garbage, and Oichlan Shkotzim Ramasim, they're eating creatures and stuff, so there's a lot of blood being splattered in the area, and she could just blame her stain on the Chazirim. Ein Chosh Nuksam, Orm Nachmar Yitzchak. This town called Daikras, even though it's lacking this feature of Chazirim, but it has a similar status because of the abundance of the butchers there. Ki ir sheish b'chazirim dam, it's compared to the ir of Chazirim, in which case every isha can just blame every stain on the butchers. Interesting. So we have a town which is kesem free because of the prevalence of alternate sources of dam. So, as the Mishnah sets forth, the minimum size of a stain to trigger an issue is kegris shel pul. So just for argument's sake, let's call it the size of a penny. So below that size is okay. Beyond that size is tame. What about exactly a penny? Amar Rav Huna kegris ein atayla. If it's like a gris, so it's exactly like, she can't blame it on the machilus. Only below that size. Pachas megris toilu. Rochiz the Amari says no. The allowance is up until and including a gris. Kegris toilu. Yoisim gris ain't a toilu. Beyond that is too much. What's the machilus about? Lema, perhaps we can suggest, That's a classic question. When you say, from here until, is it until including the destination or up until and not including destination? Lema ba'ad, when you say until va'ad b'chalal k'miflagi, is the ad included? Perhaps that's the machloek. The Rav Huna Savar, he says ad, when we say up until the penny, but not including v'ad b'chalal, Rav Chizkiya Savar, ad means including v'ad b'chalal. Amar Rav Huna, no, we don't have to say that our machloek is linked to that question. It's some and some. Sometimes it goes including, and sometimes not including. It depends if it generates a chumra. So it can go either way. Whichever one generates a chumra, always it's a chumra. And likewise over here, it's a chumra to say until and not including. Right? Only until the penny, but not including. That's why I picked that approach. Rav Chizda Amar Lach, Rav Chizda will tell you, Ba'alma. True, in general, we'll go l'chumra and not l'kula. But why, in this case, am I being lenient? Am I allowing even a penny to be considered below the threshold? The Revo, as Revo teaches us, typically, even by the shiuri chachamim, we go l'chumra, except chutz from the kesem, chutz mikigrishot ksam l'hakel. And the reason why it's different in our case is because really, minatur. She's fully tar, it's just a chumra midrabbanon, that a kesem is attributed to damnida, and therefore we allow ourselves more room for leniency, and we matir, even if it's sheer of a gris, as long as it's not above that point. So according to this version of the Gemara, both Rav Huna and Rav Chizda were discussing, were elaborating on the terms of our mission. But there's another slightly different version. Ika damrila, lashmata, bapi nafsha, some presented this discussion as an independent discussion, not relating to the Mishnah. It was a standalone machlekes. What about a kesem the size of a gris? Rav Huna Amar kigris is like above, kiyasir, kiyasir mikigris, and she's tamir. Rav Chizda Amar, no, it's like below. Kigris is kipachos mikigris. What's the machlekes about? The question is whether when we say ad, in the context of our discussion, is it including or not including? V'kamiflaki v'ad, v'ad, doch. Could I mean, as we explained, that according to Rav Huna, we're machmer, whereas according to Rav Chizda, by ksamim, there's a special dispensation. Maybe it comes a kash. Rav Huna says a penny is considered like beyond a penny. Go to the next one. Hoyo la tibe damim lamata v'tibe damim lamala. Rashi learns lamata means below, means small in size. So she has small drips, and also large drips. V'tiv damim lamala. Toila be'alyan kigris. Even the large drips, she can be toila, she can blame it on a louse, as long as it's ad kigris, until the size of a gris. Now, what does it mean, ad until? Ma'ila kigris milamata. It means to say that up until and including a gris is still legal, because a gris is like below a gris, and it's tar. And so Kashan Rav Huna says that she's considered tummy like a gris milamala. The actual gris size is like beyond the gris. So up until and not including, because if it's already a gris, you're already past the threshold and she's tummy. Okay, let's do a quick chazara today's daf. A kesem found on her skin in a location which can be attributed to the source of dam nida, for instance, on the akeva, which could have come into contact with the area, or even reish goyla, which could have dripped on it as she was walking. She's tummy. Even on the back of her hand, which could have brushed by the area. But typically we don't assume that tumah travels from one stop to the other. Ein machzikin tumah mokim mokim. The reason why on the back of the hand is because it could have directly brushed the area. What if the stains come across in a very unusual configuration? Circle, etc., etc. We left that unresolved. There's a story about the stain on the loom threads. She was instructed to duplicate it and determine accordingly. We spoke about the stain on the chalak worn by a short and tall woman. We discussed the stain discovered after Leah wore it on Monday, after having been worn by Rachel on Sunday, who post-inspected it before passing it on. Leah is presumed to be tamei, but she can send a cleaner's bill to Rachel. Okay, we had a long Mishnah regarding various attributions and tliyos, which are allowances when it comes to a kesem. As Rabbi Akiva taught us, we try to go lahakel on these matters. And we had examples of a tliyos, a butcher, a shechita behem chayva oif, even sitting next to people involved in these things, a maka, even a maka which is partially healed, which can be reopened and produce more dam. What about this size? Is there a minimum size? The size is a machoilus. We have three shitas. Shimon Gamliel says, yeah, blame it on the dead louse if you were involved with the louse. Chum say, no, even without being involved. And Chonin Antinus has a middle root. He says, you don't have to have that involvement, but still you have a maximum size, which is a gris. Even the Chacham would agree that at most you could be toiler the size of a pishpish. And the Gemara adds, if you find a square-looking stain, all agree you can blame it on the pishpish. Now, up until a gris, you're tar. Beyond the gris, Tommy, what about an exact gris? Machlokes. Rav Huna says tar. Rav Huna says tar. When it comes to Ksamim, we go lahakal. All the best to you and atzlachra.